Kunjabi Hare. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hare. Gopi Chanda Pallava Giravarir Hari. Gopi Chanda Pallava Giravarir Hari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Ramuna Tira Vanachari. Ramuna Tira
Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Bhavraja Kachara Satir Sata Shri Shimras Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Chari Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaura Premananda. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Disciple Day, Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Kinamani Namasi Saraswati Gauravana Bhutani Vishishi Shimivari Paskadari Sutrani. Is the microphone loud enough? It doesn't feel very loud. I have to shout more. Okay, thanks. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're once again on Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 9. We're going to continue reading verse 36, which has a very, very long purport, and I'll do a certain section of it. Let's do the verse again. Etavadeva jignasyam. Tatva jignasunatmanaha. Anvaya vitareka bhyam. Yachat sarvatra sarvada. Etavadeta jignasyam. Tatva jignasunatmanaha. Anvaya vitareka bhyam. Yachat sarvatra sarvada. Etava deva jignasyam. Tatva jignasunatmanaha. Anvaya vitareka bhyam. Yachat sarvatra sarvada.
Thank you.
Vaishnavis. Up to this. Eva. Certainly. Jignasyam. Is to be inquired. Tattva. The absolute truth. Jignasana. By the student. Atmana. Of the self. Anvaya. Directly. Vyatare kabhyam, indirectly, yet, whatever, shat, it may be, sarvatra, in all space and time, sarvada, in all circumstances. A person who is searching after the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, must certainly search it up to this, in all circumstances, in all space and time, and both directly and indirectly. So we are reading from, starts this, the paragraph, because the so-called leaders, we find that it's right after the Namam Duskritantam Mudhavars. Okay, there. I think that's right. Okay. It's a little hard to follow always when you come back each day and kind of start in the middle, so I'm going to go back and try to put this in more in context, you know, and get a little background. But I really always like to just read what Srila Prabhupada says first, so we can focus on that. So, Srila Prabhupada says, because the so-called great leaders of human society are ignorant of this great knowledge of bhakti yoga and are always engaged in ignoble acts of sense gratification, bewildered by the external energy of the Lord, they are stubborn rebels against the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they never agree to surrender unto him because they are fools, miscreants, and the lowest type of human beings. That comes from the verse, is it 715 above it? 715, I think, yeah. Such faithless non-believers may be highly educated in the material sense of the term, but factually they are the greatest fools of the world because by the influence of external material nature, all their so-called acquisition of knowledge has been made null and void. Therefore, all advancement of knowledge in the present context of things has been misused by cats and dogs fighting with one another for sense gratification, and all acquisition of knowledge in science, philosophy, fine arts, nationalism, economic development, religion, and great activities are being spoiled by being used as dresses for dead men. There's no utility in the dresses used for covering a coffin or a dead body, save for getting false applause from the ignorant people. The Srimad Bhagavatam therefore says again and again that without attainment of the status of bhakti yoga, all the activities of human society are to be considered absolute failures only. I wish you'd tell a little stronger. You know. That's really wonderful. Srila Prabhupada is just saying exactly what material life is. This is it. It is said, Parabhavastavada bodhijato yavana jignasata atmatatvam yava kriyastavad idam manuvai karmatmakam viena surira bandha. Bhagavatam 555. As long as one is blind to inquiring after self-realization, all material activities, however great they may be, are all different kinds of defeat because the aim of human life is not fulfilled by such unwanted and profitless activities. The function of the human body is to attain freedom from material bondage, but as long as one is fully absorbed in material activities, his mind will be overwhelmed in the whirlpool of matter, and thus he will continue to be encaged in material bodies life after life. Evam manak karma visham priyankte avidyat
avidyatman upadiyamane pritir nayavan mai vasudeve namuchate deha yugena tavat. This is Bhagavatam, next verse, Bhagavatam 5.5.6. It is one's mind that generates different kinds of bodies for suffering, different kinds of material pangs. Therefore, as long as the mind is absorbed in fruitive activities, the mind is understood to be absorbed in nescience, and thus one is sure to be subjected to the material bondage in different bodies again and again, until one develops a transcendental love for Godhead, Vasudeva, the Supreme Person. To become absorbed in the transcendental name, quality, form, and activities of the Supreme Person, Vasudeva, means to change the temper of the mind from matter to absolute knowledge, which leads one to the path of absolute realization and thus frees one from the bondage of material contact and engagements in different material bodies. Om Jnana Kamanda Shaganjana Salakaira Chaksarmitan Tasma Sri Gurudeva Namaha Vanchakalpa Tribhishcha Kripasindhu Devacha Patitano Pavni Dio Vaishnavaya Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Prabhupada. So I'm going to take us a little step back and a little overview of where we are with the Chatur Shlokis. Of course, these very, very wonderful, famous verses, which are basically, as all of our acharyas say, the 18,000 verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, can be summarized within these four verses, which were first spoken to Lord Brahma, and then, of course, expanded more and more by Srila Vyasadeva. So, in Srila Prabhupada actually gives another purport to this verse in Adi Lila 156. Has anyone talked about that yet in class? It, no, okay. So I thought it was interesting. While I was sort of researching the class a little bit, two different places in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Chatur Shloka verses are given, and one in Majjhalila Prabhupada refers to this one. So this is what Prabhupada, this is a much more condensed purport. At least I'm going to be part of it. And what I liked about this is he gives a summary of the Chatur Shlokas and what they are teaching us sequentially, one by one. So Prabhupada says, Adilila 156 purport, Srimad Bhagavatam has 18,000 verses, which are summarized in four verses beginning with Aham Evasam Evagre and concluding with Yat Shat Sarvatra Sarvada. In the first of these verses, the transcendental nature of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is explained. Okay? The second verse further explains the Lord is detached from the workings of the material energy, Maya. The living entities, although part and parcel of Lord Krishna, are prone to be controlled by the external energy. Therefore, although they are spiritual, in the material world they are encased in bodies of material energy. The eternal relationship of the living entities with the Supreme Lord is explained in that verse. The next verse, this is the third one, instructs that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by his inconceivable energies, is simultaneously one with and different from the living entities in the material energy. This knowledge is called Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva. When an individual living entity surrenders to the Supreme Lord Krishna, he can then develop natural transcendental love for him. The surrendering process should be the primary concern of a human being. So we've made this progression to understanding Krishna and his energies, how he's one with and different than energies, how the living entity relates with Krishna and what his purpose is. Now, the last verse today, 36, it is said that a conditioned soul must ultimately approach a bona fide spiritual master and try to understand perfectly the material and spiritual worlds and his own existential position. In other words, who are we? It's like metaphysically, who are we? What is our purpose? How do we fit into the big picture of reality? So here are the words, anvaya vitareka bhyam, directly and indirectly, suggests that one must learn the process of devotional service in two aspects. So I'm going to focus a little today on this directly and indirectly. So there's two aspects of anvaya vitareka bhyam. Prabhupada says one must directly execute the process of devotional service and indirectly avoid the impediments to progress. Okay. So moving to this fourth verse, Jiva Goswami in Bhaktisandarbha 115 and also Vishnudatta Chakravarti Thakura in his commentary in his Vaishnava Toshana. What's it called? In his Bhagavatam commentary, all state the same conclusion that Srila Prabhupada said here, that this verse describes the process of sadhana bhakti. So, explain how this works. First of all, going back to verse 31, Krishna explains what he's doing. He introduces the Chaturslokas in 31. 32 is kind of a, it's a transition verse, like you'll be able to understand this or something. But 31, he says, Jnanam paramam guhyam ne yavijnana samanvitam suras hasyam tarangam cha grahana garitam maya. The personality of God had said, knowledge about me as described in the scriptures is very confidential. That's the guhyam, isn't it? I can't find it. Oh, yeah, parama guhyam, most confidential. And it has to be realized in conjunction with devotional service. The necessary paraphernalia for that process has been explained by me. You may take it up carefully. So this is what Krishna says. This is what I'm going to tell you in these four verses. So Jiva Goswami says, the first three parts are explained in the first three verses. Rahasyam, secret, means prema. In other words, the highest bhakti, parama bhuyam. And its part, anga, is sadhana. So we have the goal, the final goal, prayojana, prema bhakti, is being described here. Somewhat, and Jiva says it's indirect. It's a little bit hidden. It's guhyam, confidential. And its part, the anga, is sadhana. And he also says that's confirmed by Sridhar Swami's commentary, explains it the same way. So then we have, if one is inquisitive, tattva jignas sanatmana, if one wishes to realize the truth, which hopefully all the readers of the Bhagavatam are at the point where we all want to understand the absolute truth. We probably wouldn't be reading the Bhagavatam if we had no interest in it. We wouldn't have gotten this far. And it says, and then at the beginning, the first word is etavat, which Prabhupada translates as up to this. And this etavat refers to up to what? Up to the process of bhakti yoga, or more confidentially, up to prema bhakti. And if one is going to go up to this, and one wishes to realize the truth, the implication is, which is mentioned by Srila Prabhupada in the comment that we just read, and it's also by Jiva Goswami, Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur. Basically, there's a consensus on all the acharyas that it's implied this means by approaching the spiritual master. It's not directly in the verse, but they all say that's what's meant. And that's because you can only go so far. When it says etavat up to this, you can only go so far on your own. You have to be able to get guidance from the spiritual master. So, what are we going to learn? How do we do this? What is the process? Anvaya vitre kabyan. We must learn both directly and indirectly. So this refers to learning both positive and negative examples. What is to be done and what is not to be done. That's all part of sadhana. So Vishwanath says this verse discusses positive results through performance of bhakti yoga and negative results for non-performance of proper sadhana. And the commentaries also say that it's implied that one must, and I just said that, must learn from the spiritual master because of the word etavat. Because we can only go so far without guidance. So, in the same purport, going back to Adi 1:56, Srila Prabhupada says, one of his conclusions about this verse is, those who are serious about the knowledge of the transcendental world, which is far beyond the material cosmic creation, must approach a bona fide spiritual master to learn the science both directly and indirectly. One must learn both the means to approach the desired destination and the hindrances to such progress. So it's a very good, simplified understanding of what sadhana bhakti is about. And that's what Krishna is telling us, that we have to do this. So we could say, I guess a summary of this is that one who wishes to learn the truth must learn how to discharge the process of sadhana, of bhakti yoga, by learning what to do and what not to do from the spiritual master. Okay? And fairly simple. Okay. So the last paragraph, going back to yesterday, the last paragraph gave positive examples of all the social orders working to serve the Lord. Prabhupada talked about how society is set up in such a way that everybody makes progressive forward progress on the path of religious duties and ultimately Krishna consciousness. And then he shifts it to we just read just before this is the four types of impious men who do not surrender. Now, going to what we just read today, Prabhupada's continuing describing those leaders who are under the sway of material energy. They mislead the population away from Krishna and religious life. And we could say so much more about this, but I'm not going to, because I think that's fairly obvious. Most of us understand by now the nature of the material world, and we're getting more and more clear idea of how the leaders of the world are not leading us in a good direction. Unless we consider a continuous warfare over 5,000 years is a good direction to go. We can't follow our leaders, we can't follow the philosophers, the psychologists, even, believe it or not, even though I am one, the scientists, the researchers, they're not going to give us knowledge beyond this knowledge of nescience, beyond this knowledge of a certain level of material energy. Do they know something? Yes. Do they figure out certain information? Yes. I'm the first one to, as Radhakrishna knows, to run to a doctor if something's wrong with me, because there is a body of knowledge. There's a science there. But I don't go to my doctor unless it's Radhakesh or Prem Sankirtan, one of our devotee doctors, to learn the absolute truth, to know what's the purpose of life, to know the goal of life. That we approach the spiritual master, that we approach the sadhus, the acharyas, the scriptures, the shastra. Okay? So, now, beyond the leaders, the next verse of Bhagavatam that Prabhupada quotes, 5.5.6, expands or extends this idea, well, it's not just the leaders, it's all living entities in this material world. We all have this problem. That verse says, when the living entity is covered by the mode of ignorance, he does not understand the individual living being and the supreme living being, and his mind is subjugated by fruit of activity. Therefore, until one has love for Lord Vasudeva, who is none other than myself, he is certainly not delivered from having to accept the material body again and again. Okay, so again, the negative example. If one does not understand his position, and that's what the previous verses in Bhagavatam talked about, the living entity and Krishna, their relationship, right? And how, and that Achintabheda Veda Tattva concept, if one does not understand that, he's not going to be delivered, and you'll have to take repeated birth and death. So that's the issue. That is our problem. In this material world, all living entities are facing repeated birth and death because they do not have higher knowledge of themselves in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So this idea has kind of intrigued me about positive and negative examples, because they're used throughout our Vaishnava literature. It's something we see all the time, and it's actually a very well-known educational concept. I mean, you know, it's like Vyasadeva and all of these writers, these were very intelligent people. Not only did they know the absolute truth, they knew how to teach it. They knew how to write. They knew how to, just like Srila Prabhupada, didn't he give constant analogies, constant, you know, examples, right? He would always be giving this example. I mean, we can, all of you can think of different examples that Srila Prabhupada would give, you know, I mean, and most of them came from the scriptures, you know, understanding the living entity, difference from Krishna, you know, the ocean, the drop of water, you know, the process of purification of the senses and mind, the hot, you know, iron rod, that when it goes in the fire, it takes on the qualities of fire, right? All of these examples are there in the scriptures. And in education, there's what we call concept learning. In other words, there's actually kind of a process or a science of how do you teach concepts to people, new concepts. And often this is with children, like in grade school or whatever. I'll give an extremely simple example. You want to teach a young child what is a square. So you teach them positively. Okay, they have equal angles, they have equal lengths of sides. You show them some examples of it. These are all squares. But then you have to, but what about counterexamples? You know what a rhombus is? A rhombus is a figure that has equal sides, it has equal angles, but they're like this. It's not 90 degrees. So you have to say, okay, this is not a square because it doesn't have 90. In other words, you have to show both. What is a square and what is not a square? A rectangle is not a square. You know, that kind of thing. And then people get it. So our Vedic literatures do the same thing. And I'll give you a few examples. One of the best known verses probably is from, of course, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.11, Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jhana Karmanya Navritam. If we want to understand Uttama Bhakti, topmost devotional service, you need to know positive example, Anukulyena Krishnana Shilanam, that it's continuous positive service to Krishna. Then there's the negative example. It's Jnana Karma Jnanavrita, without karma, jnana, or other desires such as yoga, etc. Here's what it is, and here's what it's not. It's not karma, it's not jnana. So in other words, both are there. This is a common way that, you know, we learn spiritual concepts. Another really good one I liked is, remember the chapter 20 in Krishna book, or in the 10th canto, descriptions of Vrindavan in autumn? Very beautiful. All of these allegory analogies, you know, and they're all using things from nature that would be there in Vrindavan, and they compare them to different things in human life. For instance, 10:24, the sky was then covered by dense blue clouds accompanied by lightning and thunder. Thus the sky and its natural illumination were covered in the same way that the spirit soul is covered by the three modes of material nature. And actually, I was just reading Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura's commentary, and he actually says in each one, this is a negative example, this is a positive example. Just to make it real clear, he says, this is negative. Then a couple verses later, flashing with lightning, great clouds were shaken and swept away by the fierce winds. Just like merciful persons, the clouds gave their lives for the pleasure of this world. So that's a positive example. So both are there. And when we get to, of course, these are all theoretical concepts, but when we get to the very specific processes of sadhana, same thing. We have do's and we have don'ts, right? Nectar of instruction, verse 2, six activities that spoil devotional service. Verse 3, six activities that are favorable for devotional service, right? Nectar devotion, Bhakti Samrita Sindhu, first 10 items of devotional service, those things which are favorable. Next 10, things to avoid, and so on. Even in the yoga system, right? Yama, niyama, things to do, things not to do. And then we come down to, on a very practical, personal level, our initiation vows. What do we vow? Four regular principles. That's what not to do. Those are obstructions to advancing in Krishna consciousness. So they're given by the spiritual master. Those things which you must avoid. They don't specifically give you Krishna consciousness. I've known agnostics who follow the four regular principles. But if you don't follow them, you're not going to get very far at all. So you have to avoid those. That's your groundwork. Then the do's. Chant 16 rounds Hare Krishna. And of course, everything else, hearing, chanting, you know, deity worship and all those other things that are there, association with devotees. But the most basic, chanting Hare Krishna, because that's the Yuga Dharma. That's the basis of the Hare Krishna movement. Okay? So, with that little background or side, we finally, in the very last paragraph that we read of this part today of Srila Prabhupada, now gives a positive alternative. He says, to become absorbed in the transcendental name, quality, form, and activities of the Supreme Person Vasudeva means to change the temper of the mind. I like that, the temper of the mind, the consciousness, from matter to abstract to absolute knowledge, which leads one on the path of absolute realization and frees one from the bondage of material conduct and engagements in different material bodies. In other words, you know, by this association, this absorption in Krishna consciousness, one reaches this point, this absolute platform, spiritual platform of realization, and becomes free from material understanding, material contamination, and is able to get out of the engagement of birth after birth. Now, specifically, the way that one becomes absorbed, Prabhupada is saying here, is in the name, quality, forms, and activities, or nama, rupa, guna, and lila. This is often mentioned in many places in the scriptures. Sometimes also parikara, associates is listed, seva, the service. A few others are sometimes put in there, depending upon the author and, you know, the particular commentary. But basically, this idea of the nama, rupa, guna, and lila is often mentioned. Now, it's found in many purports, verses, by acharyas. Now, I could not find the exact verse that actually lists these four things. I think it's from the Katha Upanishad or something. I don't think it's from one of our books that we have normally. I couldn't find it in the Vedabase, because usually, you know, you have like in Dr. Samri Sinu, it'll say Namadi, meaning, you know, the name and others, and then often it'll be translated name, form, you know, name, form, and all the others, Leela. So At any rate, it's there spoken of by our acharyas and by Srila Prabhupada in many, many places. If anyone can actually find a verse that lists those four, let me know. I mean, they can find that. But anyway, here's a really good example. This is from a lecture that Srila Prabhupada gave. I think it was an Amnabad. It's in the Lilamrita. Prabhupada was saying, the purification of one's chanting Harinam means as soon as you chant the holy name of Krishna, you will see the form of Krishna. You all do that, right? As soon as you start chanting? It's okay. Anyway, you will see, you know, if we were a little more pure in advance, this is what will happen. As soon as you chant the holy name of Krishna, you will see the form of Krishna. Realize the qualities of Krishna. Remember the pastimes of Krishna. That is pure chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. Pure chanting. That is stated in the commentary of Srila Jiva Goswami that a pure devotee who chants the Hare Krishna mantra immediately realizes the nama, rupa, guna, lila, everything about Krishna. Simply by chanting the names, you will feel the form of Krishna. You will remember all of his qualities. Oh, Krishna is so qualified, he's so magnanimous, so merciful, right? Then you will remember his lila, pastimes. Oh, Krishna instructed Arjuna. Krishna played with his coward boys. Krishna had very nice talks with the gopis and with his mother Yashoda. These things you will remember. That is the actual perfection of chanting. Anyway, I like that. I thought it was very, very nice. So, it's a process, of course. And this is a more perfected stage. But this is described really nicely in Jiva Goswami explains in the Bhakti Sandarbha. It's a long section. It's verses 248 to 279. Not that anybody particularly cares, but I just want to let you know that what I'm saying is bona fide. I didn't make it up. It describes the processes of hearing, chanting, and remembering all in terms of Nama Rupa Guna Lila. In other words, he's describing the nine process of devotional service in Bhakti Sandarbha, and he goes through them all, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. And particularly, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, hearing, chanting, remembering, he talks about chanting about the name of Krishna, chanting about the form, chanting about the qualities, and chanting about the Lila, and so forth, particularly remembering, that how we remember all of these things in the process of, and he's talking about sadhana bhakti. And it's a progression. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur also says this, that it's a progression realization from nama, rupa, guna to lila. Okay, and then I'll, going back to Jiva Goswami, he says, as previously explained, there's a sequence in Smaranam to make it easy. Remembering the name and form, then the qualities, the associates, service, and pastimes. Okay? So anyway, so these things develop within the heart of the devotee. As we become purified and as our hearing, chanting, remembering increases over time, we will develop in this sort of sequence. We'll gain a realization that Krishna is there in his holy name. We'll start to appreciate Krishna's form, his beauty, his qualities, his mercy, his kindness, his all of these things, and eventually it will remember those pastimes of Krishna. He further says, though one can attain perfection by hearing the name, form, qualities, and pastimes in any order, one should first hear the name in order to purify the antakarana. Antakarana, consciousness, the mind, the mental state. When the antakarana is pure, one develops qualification from hearing about the form. When the form has been manifested fully, the qualities manifest. When the name, form, and qualities and associates manifest completely, the pastimes manifest nicely. This is the sequence of sadhana that's been recorded. The same sequence applies to chanting and remembering. Okay? So, in other words, chanting is actually most important. Because chanting is they're all processes of purification because there are nine processes of devotional service and they all work. They're all very important and people have different attractions to different ones of the processes or all the processes. But because it's the Yuga Dharma, chant and, because it was given to us by Lord Chaitanya, it's given by all our acharyas, it's given by Srila Prabhupada and our spiritual masters, chanting is the most powerful process that purifies the antakarana and allows us to then be able to appreciate some different levels, different depths, depending on, our particular stage of advancement. But we start to appreciate the form of Krishna, the qualities, and, of course, the pastimes, where they become more and more ingrained in one's heart and one's mind. So Well, these are the things that we are hearing, chanting, and remembering. The Nam, the description of the glories, chanting, hearing the name of the Lord. Here's a nice verse. Bhagavatam says, there's so many verses about glorifying. You know, we could spend 2 hours glorifying the holy name. This here's one. My Lord, it is not impossible for one to be immediately freed from all material contamination by seeing you, not to speak of seeing you personally, merely by hearing the holy name of your lordship only once. Even chandalas, men of the lowest class, are freed from all material contamination. Very powerful. Just the name of Krishna. And the glories and the potency of chanting the holy name of Krishna are very well established. And that is why Jiva says the chanting of the name is superior to remembering. And that's because there's no restrictions, right? No disqualification for chanting. Anyone says Nam Smaranam requires more purity of the consciousness to actually just to remember the holy name. It's much easier just to chant the name. Now, you can remember other things. You can remember, you know, lila form, qualities like that. Then, of course, there's Rupa, Krishna's form. What could be a more beautiful form for us to meditate upon, for us to think about, to remember? And a beautiful, you can also, of course, remember the form of the deity as we meditate on the deity form of the Lord every day. And also, one of the ways we remember the form is spoken about so much by great devotees is the lotus feet of Krishna. When we talk about Krishna's form, and it's particularly in the beginning, it's very, very valuable. Just think about Krishna's lotus feet, because we start at the bottom, right? In other words, you know, we put ourselves in a very low position, which is not artificial. It is absolutely reality, you know, that we are, our position in relationship to Krishna and to all the great devotees and our guru is, you know, we take a very humble position. So there are many verses like taking the lotus feet of the Lord into one's heart. And sometimes lotus feet is also used almost synonymously like surrender. The surrendering process, surrendering to the lotus feet of Krishna, you know, taking the dust of the lotus feet of Krishna. And it also means taking shelter. We're taking shelter of Krishna. When we say we take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, that means we depend solely on Krishna for protection. Because we know that ultimately, we can try so many things, and we use our intelligence, you know, we do what we need to do, keep body and soul together, but ultimately it's up to Krishna. Ultimately, our protection is dependent upon the Lord, whatever he desires for us. And as Lord Chaitanya says, sometimes he handles us roughly by his embrace. But, so, Jiva Goswami says, he gives himself to one who remembers his lotus feet. He appears directly before the person who remembers him. So it's a very powerful process. And if we work on and develop over the years our remembrance of Krishna, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's form, Krishna's words, his great devotees, his associates, all of these things, Krishna will eventually appear to us. And of course, we remember his goodness, his qualities, his beauty, and his sweetness and compassion and mercy. Sometimes for the devotee, just thinking of Krishna's mercy and compassion is, you know, is very, very strong, because that's very meaningful to us. We can hope for and expect. In fact, that's one of the six symptoms of surrender, to always be expecting the mercy of the Lord, to always be surrendering to the Lord. And, of course, his lila, his pastimes. Very, very wonderful pastimes. We are so fortunate that Krishna has appeared on this earth only 5,000 years ago and appeared again as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu only 500 years ago. So we have a wealth of pastimes. We know who Krishna is. And it's often said that, you know, Krishna doesn't have to come to this material world. He does not have to incarnate to kill demons or to establish religious principles. He can have any of his associates or energies do that. But it's for the devotees that he comes. So he comes to give enlivenment to his current devotees and his entourage of devotees, but also to attract the minds of the non-devotees, to attract, or to the fledgling devotees, to give us something that attracts us to him. And how do we remember that simple? Jiva says, the names, forms, qualities, and pastimes are contained in works written by great devotees. These are recited by great devotees. Bhagavatam is the best among the works. Right? Of course, you're not going to read anything with Jiva Goswami, which doesn't say Bhagavatam is only the book to read, because it's, you know, every single volume of the Sandarbhas has hundreds and hundreds of quotes, and 80% of them are from the Bhagavatam. And he establishes in the Tattvasandarbha that the Bhagavatam is the standard of truth for the Vaishnava, and the Vaishnavas accept that. Our highest standard, if he ever comes down to it, is it this, is it that? What is our philosophy? It's Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the Amala Purana, uncontaminated, the pure words of the devotees of Krishna and Krishna himself describing him. So, and of course, of all of these processes, hearing comes first, because without hearing, we would not know about the other processes. So we first have to hear. We hear from the scriptures, we hear from the guru, Guru Sadhu Shastra, and the goal of that sadhana, of the hearing and chanting, is remembering, right? So, the first rule that Jiva Goswami says before he gives out his 64 rules of everything you have to do in devotional service, what's the primary rule? Who can remember? What does he say first we have to do? What's that? Well, that's the next instruction. That's good too. You know, the enthusiasm and patience and confidence. Those are good. But this is, in other words, before all the rules, this is like the primary rule that all the other rules support. Excellent. Yeah. That is quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar Bhakti Samasindhu. It's from the Padma Purana. Krishna is the origin of Lord Vishnu. He should always be remembered and never forgotten at any time. All the rules and prohibitions mentioned in the Shastras should be the servants of these two principles. So Rupa Goswami states that, then he gives his 64 rules, whatever. So always remember Krishna, never forget him. How do we do it? How, at the stage of Vaidhi Bhakti, do we always remember Krishna, never forget him? Well, it's part of the process. It's what sadhana bhakti is about. Coming to the stage, and the daily sadhana, the hearing and chanting and service, leads to remembering. Right? Smarana, Krishna, yeah. As long while we are hearing, we are chanting, leads to smarana. Here's a purport Srila Prabhupada says, Smritya means remembering Krishna always. Life should be molded in such a way that one cannot remain alone without thinking of Krishna. We should live in Krishna so that while eating, sleeping, walking, and working, we remain only in Krishna. Our Krishna Conscious Society recommends we arrange our living so that we remember Krishna. Vismartavyo na jatu chit. Vishnu should never be forgotten. That is the spiritual way of life, smritya. This remembrance of the Lord can be continued if we hear about him constantly. To hear about Krishna from Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita or similar authentic literature is to live in Krishna consciousness. So the process of remembering begins with hearing, and we can also say also chanting. So Srila Prabhupada also says, this is in a book called Second Chance, it must be from a lecture, it says, therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has recommended Kirtaniya Sada Hari. One should chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. This is the best way of remembering Krishna in this age, and always remembering Krishna ensures our return home back to Godhead. Okay, stop there. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Questions, comments, corrections, observations? Pancha Guru Prabhu.
No hard best rules for the chanting of the holy name. But sometimes if someone has like long hair or beard or not even dressed properly, we don't really let them chant in the temple. And sometimes ladies can't chant, you know, in certain places because of... So where does the social or the, you know, rules and regulations restrict one from chanting, you know, the chanting process?
Well, as you said, there are no hard and fast rules. So, it is a bit arbitrary. You have to make decisions. Some of it's based upon, of course, any instructions we might have from Srila Prabhupada or the Acharyas. But as far as an individual chanting, absolutely. It doesn't matter how he's dressed, how he looks, how, you know, what his hair or beard length is. Now, as far as in the temple, leading a kirtan, we've come to sort of a conclusion that that's kind of an honor. And, you know, to lead the kirtan, to lead, to give the class, to be on the altar, certainly. And they sort of show one as a leader of some type. So we might sometimes have some restrictions, you know, on what would be proper for that. Now, this temple is a little bit looser on those things than other places I've seen in terms of, because often our young people aren't always necessarily, you know, dressed in dhoti and kirtan and everything and, you know, shaved head, and sometimes baby chair time. But I think it just, I don't know that there's an absolute rule on that, to be honest. Somebody has some scriptural authority on that, or I don't know. Sorry, I can't help you out too much on that. But as far as, well, I'm not going to get into the gender thing, because that'll just get me all worked up. Anyway, here we don't make those restrictions. Any living entity in any body is capable of, you know, full opportunity for Krishna consciousness.
Also, that passing of the Jambu, when they were reading, the devotee said, Narayan, 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 Prabhupada. I said three times, once is enough. So,
said one is enough, what?
Once is enough, you know, Narayan. Instead of, you know, Narayan, Narayan, Narayan. But no, you know, once is enough. I'm saying Narayan. So, even after he achieved perfection of jhana, still he had to perform yajna or tapasya and Haridwar. I say perfect is perfection. So is the holy name, although it may achieve, you know, give you the ultimate...
is there time when you can give it up if you're in a state of perfection?
A way of understanding the holy name or the way of chanting it that's also connected to the whole idea of your ultimate purification?
Well, the chanting of the holy name is not, although it is the Yuga Dharma, it's not dependent upon the Yuga Dharma. I mean, people are chanting the holy name in every yuga. We see that in the Bhagavatam, many, many verses from people who are in such a yuga. So we see in Vrindavan, the perfected living entities and the perfected associates of Krishna, Nitya Siddhas, what are they doing? They're hearing about Krishna, they're chanting about Krishna, they're singing songs about Krishna, they're chanting Krishna's name. In other words, the glorification of Krishna and the chanting of Krishna's names and activities is an eternal activity of the living entity. And furthermore, I was just reading this, when Jiva Goswami in his commentaries, when he was talking about Kirtanam, he said, it is not that because it's Kali Yuga and it's an easier process, we do it. He said, no. He said, it's eternal, it's powerful in any time, in any age. You know, so no real... And the other thing, I think you were talking about the person when he reaches a certain stage. Was that the other part of your question? If that has to do with... I was actually reading, this was Vishwanath Chakravarti, I think, let's say it might have been, that when one, of course, is in the process of sadhana, either Vaidhi or Raghunuga sadhana, one follows carefully the rules and regulations. And he said that one can not necessarily follow all of them if one is at the stage of prema. So, you know, if you really feel at the stage of prema, you can kind of do what Krishna dictates to you. Or two, he said, if you have any position in society, it's interesting because our acharya hundreds of years ago said, if you have any position in society, you must follow the standard process sadhana to set example. So that's what we saw with Srila Prabhupada. In other words, Prabhupada did not really need to follow everything precisely because he was at that stage of Uttamadhikari, but he did. Otherwise, how would we follow? Oh, well, he doesn't, you know, that's how our fickle minds are, you know, as neophytes. Well, they don't do it. So, you know, whatever great men do, others follow. So basically, I think for us, you know, and, you know, we can just say, you know, we should continue our sadhana, our rounds, etc., at least through this lifetime. You know, I wouldn't count on a time when we're going to stop doing that. why would we want to also? Because as one advances, what's the stage of Raghunuga? When it becomes spontaneous, one does it out of the pleasure and enjoyment of chanting Hare Krishna, of hearing about Krishna. Why do we ever want to stop the process of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam? Right? Is that good enough? Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, we have a counter right now.
You know, there's always cultural context, and you have to respect that. I mean, probably like ancient America, you didn't have like...
Wait, it's cultural context, and probably what?
You have to respect that, and you have to engage that.
Mm-hmm. So
it's, you know,
time, place, and circumstance, yes.
Probably like ancient America, you didn't act like it was in New Delhi.
Right.
You know, it's not in New Delhi, it's in New York now, and you have to negotiate it.
Right. Yeah,
and
there's also the principle, I think Bhaktivinoda Thakur expounded upon this, the difference between principle and details. So the principles remain, right? The basic principles, chanting Hare Krishna, service to Krishna, are always going to be there. The details of how it's executed may have to do with time, place, and circumstance according to the guru's discretion. So obviously, when Prabhupada came to New York City and there's a bunch of hippies and everything else there, the standard's not going to be the full standard. You know, they're there. But over time, Prabhupada did increase standards, right? As we were ready to, right? The way I heard from Leela Amrita, from the stories, before the first group is going to get initiated, and I think he told them the day before, by the way, here's the regular principles that you're going to follow if you're initiating. Oh, well, okay, we'll try it, you know. And so, sometimes you have to gradually introduce the principles of bhakti to your audience.
Okay, I'm going to turn this more. The same principle would also hold to India.
Okay. I think that's a question of faith, too, wasn't it? Because Prabhupada had total, complete faith in the process and faith in Krishna that if he somehow gave these people, whether it was in Delhi or New York, a little bit of Krishna consciousness, it would grow and they would become more and more advanced. And maybe others didn't have that faith. They thought, oh, I can't go to the Western world even. I can't come to America. You know, it's a bunch of mediators there. Oh, I can't go there. I mean, many of his godbrothers felt that way, right? Very few really, nobody was really lining up, you know, oh, Maharaj, can I please go? No. Nobody wanted to. Because it was tapasya, it was difficult. But Srila Prabhupada, well, I think I can say without any controversy, I don't think anybody will contradict me here, that Prabhupada was uniquely empowered by Krishna to be the person, to be the devotee, to come to the Western world. And I mean, let's face it. We have an elderly Swami dressed in odd clothes who has a heavy accent, and we all came and trying to figure out what he was talking about, things we'd never heard of in our life, because, you know, we weren't born in India or anything. So some of you had some background. And we absolutely believed it, accepted it, and changed our entire lives and followed Srila Prabhupada. How could that even be? Because of his purity, he was empowered by Krishna and gave us the right message at the right time, the right place. Okay. Anything else?
I was thinking Bhagavad Gita 3:27 says, "Jat jat achar ki sistam tat tat evetara jana sajat pramanam purute lukasta danubhartate." Whatever the great personality does, common people follows. And if we look at Krishna book chapter 70, Krishna would wake up every day morning, he would bathe, he would meditate.
Who did he meditate on?
Himself.
Who did he meditate on?
On himself.
Himself.
Yeah.
Because school, there's nobody higher to meditate on, right? Even ourselves, no.
So I was thinking, like, Krishna set up this a perfect leader. Does he require? No. But he actually purposely did this just for us. Mm-hmm. So similarly, every leader should be a good example.
Yeah.
Always.
That's another thing. Let's think about it also. Prabhupada was very lenient, especially in the beginning, right? Very accepting. You know, you all know the story of the bum, you know, the drunken bum comes in on 22nd Avenue, has a couple rolls of toilet paper, he puts him up there, walks out, and Prabhupada said, just see, his devotional service has begun. In other words, he was accepting the dirty, drunken, you know, homeless person who gave him some little offering of a roll of toilet paper. Prabhupada accepted that service and said, I'm accepting it, you know, and on behalf of Krishna, his devotional service has begun. But what was Prabhupada's standard? His personal standard was very high, wasn't it? Srila Prabhupada always kept his personal standard. He always did everything. He kept his cleanliness standards, everything to his spiritual standards. You know, so even though a leader may be very lenient and very giving, very very liberal, still, personally, right? Personally, they set example. Personally, they're acharya. And after a while, the followers start saying, well, wait a minute. Let's see what he's doing, not just what he's saying or what he's letting us do. I mean, just like the Sunday feast. He used to cook the Sunday feast, clean the Sunday feast up, do everything, serve out, you know, to these young people that came. And finally, some of them were getting a little purified. They're like, wait a minute. Do you need some help, Swami? Well, yes, that'd be nice. You know, I'll do the dishes. They finally caught on, you know, that... By his wonderful example of service, we should also be serving him.
I was thinking in your class, very well presented, I appreciate, thank you. You mentioned about remembrance, memory, remembering Krishna. And I was thinking, one day I was doing a little research that did Krishna say at the moment of death, chant my name, or he said to remember? Why he's talking about remembering? Not chanting, I mean, I know chanting is very important. Jiva Goswami Pad gives a whole analysis. But still, why Krishna always, many places in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, remembering. Then I remember Nectar Devotion, chapter 10. Prabhupada gives one definition. He said, somehow or other, I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember exactly.
No,
somehow or other, when one place fixes mind in Krishna with relationship, that is called remembrance.
Somehow or another, fix one's mind.
Somehow or other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the other thing is, I was just reading also in this description of it, Jiva Goswami also said that chanting should be there with the other processes.
Yes.
In other words, you know, chanting is going to assist us to remember.
Yes.
Right?
For any bhakti.
Anything. Any of the processes.
In every process of bhakti, kirtan has to be added in order to be effective.
Right. According to Jiva. Yeah. Okay. Anything else? She's probably in class. Thank you all very much. All glories to you.